live from Midtown Tucson, this is Power Talk 1210 Studios presenting Solomon on Blast with Doug Martin and Pastor Fred.
Then wisdom appeared and she told me not to partake of that bread. Courts made in the house of the path that leads down to the dead. She said, come with me, hold fast to my reins, keep to me, run like the hills, let me show.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome again to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. I know you have a lot of choices on what you listen to, so we appreciate your listening in today. Like I mentioned last week, Fred is also out this week. I'm sure he's working hard down there in Australia, though. I was thinking we should call him just to make sure he's doing okay. But I think it's about 2 a.m. there, so maybe that wouldn't be too good a choice. He might not be too happy if we wake him up at 2 a.m.
So he's actually awake right now.
Is he?
He texted me.
No.
Yeah, no, seriously, yeah.
Seriously? Oh, okay. So maybe we don't have to let him sleep. But even if we don't call him, you guys can call us. Oscar's here, as usual. Take those calls. The number here in the studio, 520-750-7456. And if you missed today's show, like Fred is, or any show for that matter, you can go to our website, Solomon on Blast, and find the past shows and listen to them at your leisure. What else? Oh, yeah. I don't want to forget and invite all you guys out. This coming Wednesday, March 4th, Power Talk 1210 is having a pizza/one-year anniversary party at the Pizza Hut on Campbell and Blackledge. It'll be from 6 to 8 p.m. If you go to powertalk1210.com website, scroll down right there on the main page, you'll find some discount coupons for a special Pizza Hut that Pizza Hut has for the Power Talk 1210 listeners. I also heard there's going to be an anniversary cake, the Power Talk 1210 race car, stock car, and I'm pretty sure the weekday host will be there also. I know I'll be there. Giveaways, there's a photo fun booth. You want to check that out, what it's all about, photofunbooth.com. So there's all kinds of fun stuff going on. Besides that, Solomon says it's a wise thing. You look like you don't believe me, Oscar. Well, you don't think so? What does Ecclesiastes 2:24 say? In there he says, nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. So there you go. There you have it right from Solomon himself. Come out Wednesday. Celebrate Power Talk 1210 one-year anniversary with us. Show your support. Wednesday, March 4th, 6 to 8. Campbell and Blackledge Pizza Hut. So be wise like Solomon says. Okay, so let's get into the more important wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon, because the confused culture we live in hasn't changed. It's still as confused as ever and as crazy as ever. And a lot of it has to do with all the choices that we have in our culture today. But that really is what living is all about. It's about making choices. If you stop and think about it, everything in life is a choice. Where you're going to live, what you're going to eat, how you spend your money, everything we do involves making a choice. But with too many choices comes confusion. And fortunately, the book of Proverbs is all about helping us in making the right choices for the important decisions we have. Solomon's wisdom pretty much boils it down to two choices so we won't be confused. Whether to be wise or foolish, good or evil, the choices of wicked versus the righteous, the choice of being wealthy or destitute. Solomon even helps us in how to choose the right woman, or for women, the right man. All these different choices can be made using the wisdom he provides. Solomon gives us wisdom for the paths we choose in life, but ultimately, there are really only two paths, the path that leads to life or the path that leads to death. So that should be a simple choice, but in our confused culture, at least based on the news stories that are out there, most of the time people seem to be making the wrong choice. They choose the path that leads to death, not life. Why is that? Obviously, because they don't have the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon, for sure, but at the most basic level, it's probably because they don't know what the truth is. The confusion or bad choices come with come when the consequences of our choices aren't thought through and we make choices based on bad information instead of what's untrue. And when our culture is so quick nowadays to disregard biblical truth that has had a track record of being accurate for thousands of years, it's easy to see why people end up on the wrong path that they do. People want the freedom to have lots of choices, but they forget to consider the consequences. They forget to count the cost. They think real freedom is doing whatever they want without the consequences. That's why Solomon's wisdom is so useful. He not only provides us with the wisdom of what the choices are, he also provides us with the consequences of the choices. This country was founded on those principles, and in spite of what people say, and it's clear when you look at the writings of our founding fathers, Patrick Henry stated, "Give me liberty or give me death," but it's much clearer when it's read in the context. He was writing in regards to whether people should fight for their freedom. He wrote, "What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God, I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." So he was clear, the choice he was making, because he understood the consequences of the choice. But our culture forgets so quickly. The question today is, do people really understand the consequences of their choices? When we come back, we'll look at some stories that seem to indicate those consequences are never considered. We'll be right back. We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. In this first story, we look at Proverbs 1:10, and it says, "If sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause." It says, "Do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood." Well, that seems to be the case today, or in this recent past, with regards to the Islamic State extremists. This particular article talks about how the Islamic State extremists use social media to recruit. And in the article, it says that Sarah Khan, director of at the anti-extremist group Inspire, says she has seen evidence of it on common social media sites. And it's become clear a group of three teenage girls from London had been in contact with extremists online before leaving for Syria. It's thought they could have been given advice about making the journey. 20-year-old Akasa Mahu traveled to Syria to become a jihad bride in 2013 and has since thought to have been promoting terrorism via the social network media. There's evidence she's been messaging another girl, 15-year-old Shamia Boogham, one of the teenagers who fled London on Tuesday. So this was just within this past week. She's traveling with another girl, age 15, Khadiza Sulani, and another young lady, age 15, Amira Abbasi. Says the sad reality is the internet is awash with thousands of extremist websites all claiming to speak in the name of religion. Now, it's kind of interesting. We looked at a little bit of the commentary from the deputy of the state last week with regards to the young guys that were they claim just needed a job in order to be able to avoid joining up with these extremist groups. But here we've got young teenagers under 18 years old that are being recruited through social media. And you have to ask yourself, what kind of choices are they making in terms of the what they hear on these social media sites, and what actually entices them to take the path that they're taking? It's hard to understand. None of these girls in this story seem to be destitute. It's not like they don't have good parents. According to the article, it says the parents had really no idea that she was doing this, and that they have no clue as to why she did it even. They talked with one of the sisters of the girl, and she said if she had known, she would have at least taken her passport from her and torn it up so she couldn't leave. So the question is, what kind of choices are these girls making? What is it that's being told to them over these social media sites? It obviously doesn't align with, like we said at the beginning, what truth is. And when you don't have that truth in place, then you make choices that with this kind of thing seem to be absolutely crazy. And I guess what are some of the consequences that these girls expect in terms of going over there? Do they think there's something positive there? Do they think they're going to end up in paradise? Who knows? Rational people usually do something with the expectation that they'll benefit from doing it. So my question is, are these young girls rational in their thought process, or are they just very open to anything that these particular social media sites are promoting? And this lady that was interviewed for the article, she actually says that they say, come and we will give you happiness and comfort. And now it's kind of odd. She says she compares the tactics similar to ones used by far right groups, but I don't think the case is that these young girls would be enticed by far right groups that would and then in turn incorporate them into an army or use them as suicide bombers in this particular situation. And she says that the major social network should be doing more. I'm not sure what she expects them to do. One problem, she says, is that websites shut down the accounts, but there's nothing stopping the user from opening another one right away. Social media need to understand how to deal with it better. She says if they have a IP address, they can ban the IP address as a whole so that the person can't get back on. She says, protect yourselves and know who you're engaging with online. But I think it's much, much deeper than that when it comes to what is enticing 15, 16-year-old girls to actually pack up and leave home and go over there and participate to whatever extent they are. And I'd have to say that the crazy culture that we live in, even if it's these ones coming from London, obviously they're not from third world countries, it's the crazy culture that seems to lead them off on a path that doesn't make any sense at all. So if you got any ideas, any thoughts on that, give us a call. Maybe we can figure it out together. Social media seems to be the big thing, though, and when they get sucked into that and they believe what they hear or what they're told, it doesn't lead to good choices. So we'll be back with another story right after these quick commercial breaks. You can give us a call, 750-7456. We'll be right back. Touch the stars, shoes untied.
tongue gaping stare. Could I have been a magnet for money? Could I have been a new woman? I am who I am, who I am. Well, who am I? Questing some enlightenment. Could I have been?
Okay, we're back here, Solomon on Blast, on Power Talk 1210. For this next story, Proverbs 12:26 says, "The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leaves them astray." Now, I don't know if you've heard this about this article. It just came out this past week. Facebook is adding a new gender option for users when they fill out their Facebook profile. And that new option is fill in the blank. So basically, they can now make a choice all their own as to what their gender option is. It says in this article, Facebook users who don't fit any of the, and get this, 58 gender identity options that are currently offered by the social media giant are now being given a rather big 59th option, which is fill in the blank. So now if you do not identify with the pre-populated list of gender identities, you're able to add your own, said a Facebook announcement published online Thursday morning and shared in advance with the Associated Press. So like Proverbs says, you want to choose your friends carefully. And I guess you can...
Mine's not on there.
Facebook software engineer Ari Chivakula, who identifies as transgender and was part of the team that made the free form option, thinks the change will lead to more widespread acceptance of people who don't identify themselves as a man or a woman. He said, "We're hoping this will open up the dialogue." Now, Allison Fogarty, a gender identity researcher at Stanford University, said giving users control over the words describing their gender is a significant step in social recognition of a growing trans community, especially coming from the world's largest social media company. So again, here we have social media and the choices that it's providing for people. It says people are still fighting to make room for gender identity within the socially constructed, now get this, this is socially constructed binary of male and female, Fogarty said. Now, I think Fogarty's a little bit off base there that the socially constructed binary was really God created man and woman. And I think they're... The fact that she's looking at it, that it's really a negative, that the social world that we live in, the culture is what has constructed binary male and female. She says labels and identities are powerful in that they give a sense of community, a way of articulating one's experience. So this is really more about your experience, not about the way you were born, I guess. So back last year at this time, in February 2014, Facebook expanded that gender identity from male and female to a list of dozens of options. And I had to really go look, figure out what these particular options were, because I was having a very, very hard time coming up with more than two options, but they seem to have been able to come up with 58.
And mine's not on there.
It's not on there, right?
No, I'm a transgendered tree.
A tree. Wow. I don't think that was part of the choices that God created, honestly. At least when it came to humans. Here's just some of the weird choices that they put out there. Agender, that's one word. Androgen, or androgen, or androgynous. Bigender. CIS, which... I don't even know. I'm not even going to bother.
Cis as opposed to trans.
Okay, whatever that means.
It just means you're one gender. So you're cis.
Okay.
But I don't know how that'd be different than male and female. I mean,
gender fluid. Again, gender non-conforming, gender questioning, okay, gender variant, male to female. Here's one. Neither. I guess if that's your identity, what is your identity? That's hard to figure out. There's a lot of the trans, male, female, woman, person. There's two-spirit. That's a choice on there for your gender identity. Two-spirit. So I'm having a hard time.
Two-spirit?
Two-spirit, it says.
True or two?
Two. The number two, spirit.
Okay.
So as we can see, social media is really starting to help us out in the choices we make, it seems like. But again, be careful about the friends you choose. The way of the wicked leads them astray. We'll be right back after these commercial messages with some more of Solomon on Blast. Myself. Now do I hear myself? Yes. Okay. I can't tell when I'm talking if I can't hear myself. In this next segment here, Proverbs 12:5 says, "The thoughts of the righteous are right, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful." Now, the interest I got my interest was piqued by the headline on this article. Your subconscious is smarter than you might think. Is it? I don't know. Let's take a look at this article. He says, it's a common misconception that we know our own minds. As I move around the world, talking, walking, I experience myself thinking thoughts, what shall I have for lunch? I ask myself, or I think, why did she say that or do that, and try and figure it out. It's natural to assume that this experience of myself is a complete report of my mind. It's natural, but according to this article, it's wrong. There's an undermined, all psychologists agree, and unconscious, which does a lot of the heavy lifting in the process of thinking. If I ask myself, what is the capital of France? The answer comes to mind, Paris. If I decide to wiggle my fingers, they move back and forth in a pattern I didn't consciously prepare, but which was delivered for my use by the unconscious. The big debate in psychology is exactly what is done by the unconscious mind and what requires conscious thought. Or, according to the paper, this one paper, is the unconscious smart or dumb? One popular view is that the unconscious can prepare simple stimulus response actions, deliver basic facts, recognize objects, and carry out practice movements. Complex thought involves planning, reasoning, that kind of thing. Combining ideas, on the other hand, it's all requiring conscious thought. A recent experiment by a team from Israel scores points against this, though. They used a visual trick, they call it continuous flash suppression, to put information into participants' minds without them being consciously aware of it. May sound like that's kind of painful, but actually it's not. It's pretty simple. The technique is they take advantage of the fact that we have, most of us, two eyes, and our brain attempts to merge those two images that our two eyes see into one single view of the world. Now, the continuous flash suppression uses light-bending glasses to show people different images in each eye, kind of maybe like a 3D-type thing where you see two different images. One eye gets a rapid succession of brightly colored squares, which are so distracting that when the genuine information is presented to the other eye, the person's not immediately aware of it. In fact, it can take several seconds for something that is in theory perfectly visible to reach the awareness of the person. So their experiment involved presenting arithmetic questions unconsciously. So math. Got to do some math tests here. Question would be things like 9 minus 3 minus 4 equals, and not showing you the actual answer. And then that would be followed by this flashing image in one eye and a presentation of the actual answer to that math equation that they were asked to read aloud as quickly as possible. The target number could be either the right answer or the wrong answer. The amazing result is that the participants were significantly quicker to read the target number if it was the right answer rather than the wrong answer. And this showed them that the equation had been processed already and solved by their minds, even though they had no conscious awareness of it, meaning they were already primed to read the right answer quicker than the wrong one. So their mind had already processed the equation, popped up the answer, and it wasn't until they actually read it that they would, or see it, that they would know what the whether the answer was right or wrong. The results suggest that our unconscious mind has much more sophisticated capabilities than many people have thought. And so unconsciously, we make the right and the wrong decisions, obviously. So when these people are being presented with these math equations, they can unconsciously come up with the right answer quicker than they can unconsciously come up with the fact that what they're seeing is the wrong answer, which tells me that when we develop our belief system, if it's based on the truth, like we talked about a little bit at the beginning, that's going to give us the right answer, the wisdom to make the right choice a lot quicker. If our brains have been programmed, as in some of the cases of these other stories where we don't know what the real truth is, then it seems like we have a tendency to come up with the wrong answer quicker without really thinking through what the right answer should be. So they call this, supposedly according to this article, the technique that they used is a game changer in the study of unconsciousness, arguing that unconscious processes can perform every fundamental basic level function that conscious processes can perform when they thought that that wasn't really the case. Now, there's another study that showed that actually having too many choices can exhaust the brain. And it shows that the act of choosing leads to mental fatigue and decreased productivity. So they had there's this other study where they went out to a mall, basically, and they'd have people recalculate their checkbook after presenting them with a whole bunch of different choices for things to buy and whatnot. And in the end, the people that were presented with the excessive number of choices were actually mentally exhausted and had a much harder time balancing their checkbook after the fact than those that had the simple choices. So go back to that gender identity choices. When you've got 58 and now 59 choices, and that 59th choice is pretty wide open, I think there's going to be a lot of people out there with a lot of mental fatigue having to try and deal with all the choices that they have.
No wonder they're confused about who they are.
Exactly. The mental fatigue has gotten them to the point where they can't even figure out who they are. So whether or not you're making too many choices is left up to you. But you got to start somewhere with the truth, the right choice, and break it down. Simple choices. The good, the bad, the right, and the wrong. But if you haven't got the truth, it's hard to make the right choice. So we'll be back with more Solomon on Blast right after this commercial break. Okay, we're back. Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. You want to join us, 750-7456. For this next story, Proverbs 19:9 says, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies shall perish. So according to Billy Joel, only the good die young. Well, in this particular case, maybe even the bad have a tendency to die young, if you believe what this hedge fund manager was doing. The article says hedge fund manager allegedly faked his death to avoid redemptions. I think he took the path of death instead of the path of life here because of the choices he'd made. It says a New York hedge fund manager who was running an alleged fraud went to great lengths to avoid giving investors their money back, including telling an investor he had died of a heart attack, the authorities said. Now, how do you, as an individual, tell somebody that you died of a heart attack? I think maybe the... I'm sorry, I've died of a heart attack. I think the journalist or the person that wrote this story might have been able to word that a little bit better. But this guy, his name is Mark Malik, 33, stole close to $850,000 from 16 foreign and domestic investors starting in 2011, according to the SEC. Malik, and get this, he was a former New York Police Department traffic agent and security guard, was also criminally charged by New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who accused him of stealing $250,000 from five investors. He was allegedly used some of the money to find a spouse. He's being held on $1 million bond over $1 million cash bail. According to both the SEC and the Attorney General, he used brazen tactics to attract investors' cash, including, surprise, surprise, lying to a national news outlet about his performance. So he even convinced the news guys out there. When investors asked for their money back, he pulled tricks to keep the money, such as pretending he had died, or this guy's out there a little bit, comparing himself to a werewolf, the SEC said. In March of 2011, Bloomberg Report identified him as a rising fund manager based on data provided by him. So I guess they didn't do much in terms of cross-checking their information. Later, they reported that his Seven Sages fund had a 92.73% return on investment for 2012. In May of 2013, Barclay Hedge, which is a well-known hedge fund data tracker, awarded him a gold star for his fund based on his similar false claims about his performance. And he claimed his American Bridge investment Group had $100 million in assets under management with offices on Wall Street in downtown Manhattan. He had multiple hedge funds, Wall Street Creative Partners, good name for that one, Seven Sages Capital, American Bridge Investment Group, and most recently, Wolf Hedge. I guess that's why he thought he was a werewolf or something. He raised as much as $840,000 through his investment group, but never really held more than $90,000 in assets in the fund's trading account. So it doesn't seem like they're doing, the SEC is doing a very good job of keeping a track of these people. So his personal expenses were pretty interesting. $19,000 for jewelry, $6,100 in tuition to attend courses at the Harvard Extension School, and a subscription to a matrimonial matching website. So I don't know if that was which one that one particularly was, Match.com maybe or something like that. And when he went, when people were asked, pardon?
eHarmony
maybe? Okay. When investors asked for the money back, he went to great lengths. In September of 2013, he had a fictitious employee named Courtney send an email to everybody saying, to those who had been asking for their money back, to report that the delay in returning the money was because he had died. The email said, "Mr. Malik has passed away with a heart attack after accident. We will dissolve the fund shortly." Several months later, he sought to intimidate an investor who was seeking his money back by comparing himself to a werewolf. He sent the investor an email. Now, I guess nobody noticed that he came back from the dead at that point in time, because this is after he'd reported that he had died of a heart attack. He said he sent an email containing a video of a werewolf movie along with his comment that, in quotes, "That's what I think I am." SEC didn't specify which werewolf movie, though. So, not sure if that's really that relevant. Sent another email as a threat indicating that he was dangerous and threatening as a werewolf. He ended up returning $83,000 to investors and had continued to raise money up until recently. As recently as last month, he'd already raised $100,000. So there's people out there that are listening to this kind of stuff. Here's a guy that obviously had some issues there with regards to his ability to make a good choice with regards to dealing with people's money, and figured the best way to get out of it was to fake his own death. Crazy. Crazy world out there. We'll be right back with more Solomon on Blast after this break. Okay, we're back with our One Greater Than Solomon segment here on Solomon on Blast, Power Talk 1210. I don't know if you've heard of these people, righteous Gentiles. The righteous Gentiles is a phrase used by those non-Jews who risked their lives to save Jews during the Holocaust. So here's people that had significant choices to make that were much more important than some of these other crazy things we've been seeing. And there's a profile here in as one of these righteous Gentiles about a gentleman by the name of Jadwiga Suchodolsky. It says that late one evening in April of 1943, a knock was heard at the door of Sujolsky's family in the village of Warsaw. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the real name, but it's basically in Warsaw. Adam opened the door and slowly made out the shadow of a man in front of him, his body swollen with hunger. The man fell down on his knees and begged for mercy. He said, "Please help me stay alive." Adam and his teenage daughter, Jadwiga, painstakingly studied his face and finally perceived that it was none other than Michael Shaft, who was with his family, had lived in the village many years before. Michael had left the village to study law in Warsaw, but the vicissitudes of the war had taken him from one place to another, and earlier that same month he had participated in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which was a pretty significant attempt by the Jews during World War II to free themselves from the Warsaw Ghetto, which is where the Nazis imprisoned them. Escaping, he had wandered back to his native village. His wife and children hurriedly consulted among themselves, weighing the risk and danger, and they decided to take this gentleman in. As danger lurked on all sides from neighbors and untrustworthy relatives, they decided to keep Michael's presence a secret. A pit was prepared in the granary, and the opening of which was covered with animal fodder. There he remained hidden, cut off from the world for almost 2 years, till the village's liberation in 1945, January of 1945. He was fed by a member of the family who approached the granary through the chicken coop, ostensibly to feed the chickens. The food was handed to me through a narrow crack. In the winter, rain penetrated the pit, but in spite of the discomforts, I resolved to make it through. Now we realize he was in there for almost 2 years. After the liberation, word soon spread that a Jew was being nursed back to life in the village. One day, a group of partisans broke into their house and demanded that Michael be turned over to them. But one of the younger members of the family held them off long enough to allow Michael to jump out of bed and escape through the back door. Realizing they'd been duped, they gave chase but did not catch up with him. In revenge, they ransacked the Sujolsky house. That night, Michael came back. Soon thereafter, Michael and Jadwig, which was the daughter of the family, were married, and they left the village, eventually immigrating to Israel in 1957. And his wife, Jadwiga, says, "I come from a very devout Catholic family," she stated in a letter to Mrs. Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel in 1972. She said, "My family and I did what we did because we wished to observe the commandment of thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." She said, "I am proud indeed to be counted as a righteous person. At the same time, I'm glad that my family and I performed such an important commandment. And I believe due to this, we have merited a place in the world to come." So there's a choice that we don't see in our world today, where you have to decide whether or not your life is more important. He had to decide whether his entire family's life was more important. But like the daughter said, they did what they did because of God's word and the commandment that you shall love thy neighbor as yourself. And the sacrifice that they made, the threats of death, possible imprisonment because of the fact that they were hiding a Jew there in Warsaw during World War II, was pretty significant. Question is, what kind of choices are you willing to make? Those that lead to life or those that lead to death? That's always going to be the choice that we have to make. It's just a matter of whether you're basing those choices on false premises or on the truth. Hopefully, we're basing it on the truth if we stick with God's word. So that's it for Solomon on Blast this week. Hopefully, we'll have Jake Feinberg in next on the Jake Feinberg Show. And until next week, keep thinking wisely. Don't forget, Wednesday night, Pizza Hut party. Campbell and Blackledge, Pizza Hut there. We'll see you next week. So